Welcome to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant. The Legacy and Faith Show is about the journey of discovering how to create plans that protect wealth and family values for generations. And now the host of the Legacy and Faith Show, Paul Grant.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, it is another edition of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant. Hi there, Paul.
Hi, Mark.
Hey, got into kind of a tough subject last week, continuing the discussion of how to maybe alleviate some of the family conflict in estate planning, and there are ways to do that.
There are. And really one of the first things that we talked about in last week's discussion, so head over to legacyandfaith.com. There's a past podcast you can catch up with us if you missed last week's, is that we have to anticipate that there's going to be some conflict or that there's going to be some sibling rivalries. As a matter of fact, it goes all the way back to the beginning of time with Cain and Abel, right? I mean, the sibling rivalry started at the very beginning of the fall, and unfortunately, it's still present in family situations. And one of the things I talked about last week is we actually have to talk about this issue. Ignoring it or hoping that it doesn't actually take place is a bad solution, because we're just going to set up our family. We're going to tee them up for an opportunity when we deal with money, when we start dividing things, the stuff. Boy, that's a bigger place of conflict than you would imagine, because I know how to divide a bank account by the number of beneficiaries. That's simple math. But how do you divide the picture on the wall that everybody now thinks is so valuable and important because mom really just, that was her favorite painting, and I'm sure she wanted me to have it.
It was a Persian rug in our family.
Oh, yes. Yeah. I have a client where it was a dollhouse. I mean, it becomes the most amazing things that the arguments begin to take place over, which is the stuff that nobody wanted and considered junk until somebody's dead. Right. So we have to, number one, anticipate that there's going to be conflict. If we live in a rose-colored glasses world where everything is rosy, I get accused of that all the time by my wife. but if we live in that world, then we set up the opportunity that an unfortunate examples may take place. But we can do things to help mitigate the experience. Now, last week I talked about James 3, and we talked about the first course of action. The very first thing that we can always do is seek after our Heavenly Father, seek after His plan, because in verse 17 of James chapter 3, it says, "But wisdom that is from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, willing to yield, full of mercy and good fruits, without partiality and without hypocrisy." How does that sound? Is that what you would want an estate plan to look like? That it was good, that it was gentle, peaceable, it yielded good fruit, and it set up your family for success instead of rolling the dice, and I hope that they're not going to fight over the dishes. So we can make a better plan, and it first starts by addressing the issue that there might be family conflict. Unfortunately, as an attorney, which is kind of opposite of my personality, but it's how I have to think in estate planning, is I think of the worst case scenario and then build an estate plan from that platform upward. Because if it all works out and everyone is super happy, then I didn't have to use the worst case scenario. But if the worst case scenario is before me, the plan will still work. And that's a good plan. So we need to think in terms of, what if my family ran into a scenario or a sequence of events of just things that happened bad after bad that we didn't anticipate? Things are great now, but that doesn't mean that things will be great when it's actually time to close the estate. So if we have the conversation first, I think we're going to be much better prepared for it. But there are things that we can do legally as well. So that's probably also a good thing. So we need to expect that there will be conflict as the starting
point. So as people are setting up an estate plan, maybe just starting it, you're hoping that the people are being candid with you about maybe, again, we call them minefields. potential conflict they already see. This child is a problem, or I don't think they're going to, they don't know yet, but this one is going to be the executor. Or,
right.
I mean, you can probably advise all those things.
Yeah. And actually that's one of the places that we need to start, which is, well, who is the one that you want to select as the person who's going to close your estate? The personal representative is what we call them in Washington state, also known as an executor. Or if you're utilizing a trust, then it's a successor trustee. It's the person who's going to succeed you as a trustee. Selecting this person is maybe one of the more important decisions that we really need to talk through. Well, what are the family dynamics and how are other people going to respond to this person? Does this person that you're going to select, are they always the one who has to carry the family and take responsibility for everybody? Are they the only child that actually is responsible? So is that going to produce more hard feelings in them if they feel like they got to carry the whole burden of the family? I'm dealing with a family right now, and I talk to a sibling and says, well, my sibling is supposed to assist me, but that they're not going to want to do it because I know I'm difficult. And here it's the child, right, who is telling me, I know I'm difficult. I appreciate honesty. I appreciate the sense of reality. And what she's really saying is that and she actually really respects her sister and wants the best for her sister. So everything from the perspective of the one who needed the assistance, everything towards the other sister is great, but she knows that she's had some problems and that it's been a little bit of a drag on the family. Those are important things to know, because if we put a family member in charge of another family member, boy, I really don't like or suggest that. That's really a setup. Now, legally, can we do that? Of course we can do that legally. You can put anybody you want over someone else's money. No big deal. But is it the right thing for the family and for the relationship in the family? We need to have a discussion of who is going to be in charge, and will there be respect and honor towards that person, or do we already have family problems?
Do you find that it is usually someone in the family who's the executor, or are there a lot of times a third party, like just a trusted attorney or a lawyer?
Right. Most individuals do put an adult child in charge of closing the estate. A majority of the time, that works okay. It works okay. I notice how it's just, it works okay. It doesn't work fabulous. It doesn't work great sometimes. And occasionally it does too. So I don't want to paint such a negative picture that every family is falling apart when somebody dies. That's not the truth. Some families rally around each other and they support each other and they do great together. Not a problem. But those are the more rare families. I don't know what the percentages are. I don't want to make it up. But let's say it's 2 out of every 10 families is like the ideal family. And then you've got a high majority of the families that have some conflict, but they work through it and no one sues each other. We don't have any big explosions, but that it really didn't help the relationships. And then we got this last 20% that is just chaos and it's going to all fall apart. And those are the unfortunate ones. So not every family is experiencing negative experiences through the closing process. But the unfortunate truth is that I see more negative experiences than positive. So how do we correct it? Well, we got to address the issue. And so, yes, most people put an adult child in charge of the closing process. And here's another thing, is that a lot of people say, well, I'll just put all of my kids in charge. They'll have to work together. Or I'll put 2 of them in charge together. Again, legally, that works. I can do anything you want as long as it's legal. And that is perfectly fine to put multiple kids in charge. But it is even a worse scenario that I've seen right. when I can't get the two people to agree on whether to sell the house, whether to rent the home, or how to manage the property if a conflict arises. Again, sometimes that's flawless. Sometimes you got two kids who are who work great together, no problem. Where I see that most often, which is probably probably even one of the biggest dangers, is in mixed marriages and blended families, to where they take a kid from the husband's children's side right. and a child from the wife's side, and then they try to make them cooperate. So that tends to be a pretty colossal failure. But so typically I would encourage people to think of one person who has the legal authority to move the estate, to make the final decision. That doesn't mean that they can't communicate with their siblings. Matter of fact, we encourage it. We encourage them to keep their siblings informed and let them know what's going on with the estate closing process. But again, that becomes a family dynamic issue. And so, so in good families, that communication will be abundant, we'll keep everyone informed, and everyone knows what's happening, so we don't miss those expectations, right? Broken expectations are the cause of most conflict. Mm-hmm. So if we can keep the whole family informed of where we're at, how things are moving, then there is a greater opportunity to have a smooth closing process compared to when someone is doing kind of the backdoor deals where nobody knows what's going on and there isn't good communication. That's where people get antsy and, oh, my sibling is at it again. So why did mom and dad put them in charge? Well, because they did. So we need to make sure that we anticipate conflict, that we select the right personal representative, and we make sure that the right trustees are to be elected, and that the plan has proper boundaries. As a matter of fact, as we get out of break, as we come back, let's talk about some of the legal things that we can do with creating boundaries inside the estate plan itself so that we can try to help the family stay in line and in check if indeed we know that there's going to be conflict.
Conflict in estate planning, you want to avoid that. And if you're listening today, you know maybe you've got some conflict going on. You want to avoid as much of it as possible. It can be put into your estate plan. Paul would love to help you with that. How do people get in touch with you, Paul?
Head over to our website, legacyandfaith.com. There's past podcasts, upcoming educational opportunities, and ways to communicate with us, all found at legacyandfaith.com.
Back with more of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant in just a moment.
Hi, this is Paul Grant with the Legacy and Faith Show. Hosea 4:6 says, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." God's people need to be fully prepared in managing their finances and ensuring that their wealth is properly transferred. It is our passion to bring this knowledge to the body of Christ. If your church would benefit from having a financial and estate session that is biblically based, then I encourage you to reach out to us so that we can help design and implement a specific and strategic session for your church. Or if you are interested in estate planning services, then I likewise encourage you to reach out to us. You can go to legacyandfaith.com and receive all the information you need. Again, go to legacyandfaith.com.
Many families realize that with the passing of each generation, their family legacy is disappearing and they're feeling regret. To alleviate this heartache, Memories Worth Telling writes their family story and creates a beautiful heirloom book to preserve their unique history. Go to memoriesworthtelling.com to schedule your initial consultation and learn how they can capture your legacy. Once again, that's memoriesworthtelling.com.
Your photos, slides, scrapbooks, and home movies are invaluable and irreplaceable. Barry Kenny here with the Bear Services. Call us to save them as digital files to be stored electronically and shared liberally. We will even come to you so they stay in your possession. Go to thebearservices.com for more information. That's thebearservices.com.
We now return to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant, and continue today's practical discussion to apply biblical principles for kingdom purposes.
Very practical discussion this week, how to avoid family conflict in estate planning. And We were going to get into now some of the boundaries that you can be putting into an estate plan to help with these conflicts.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, most people have heard of these. They may not know them by the terminology that we use as attorneys. So the first option that we can put into an estate plan, it doesn't matter whether you use a will or whether you use a trust, because as a reminder to our listening audience, those are the only two tools I have to use in estate planning, is a will or a trust. And we can put these clauses into either of these instruments depending on what is best for your family. And the first one is called a no contest clause. As a matter of fact, the why it's called that is that we don't want someone to contest what we have put together. And if they do, then there is a stick we use. It's kind of like growing up back in the 60s and 70s.
You're out of the will.
Yeah, and that is actually the most common term that we're used to, which is, hey, if you cause conflict, if you sue to have this will or this trust set aside, then you are going to be out. You get nothing. You get zippity doo-dah.
But what if they sue and win?
Well, So let's talk about no contest clauses in Washington State specifically, which is, number one, Washington State does recognize a no contest clause. And however, so notice how quickly we transitioned in that statement. So yes, it is recognized. However, courts are going to be very temperamental to use the clause and actually find a way to fully eliminate somebody's inheritance rights. Most of the time, a judge will allow the clause to be upheld in very frivolous and greedy type of scenarios. So it's in there because it makes people stop and hopefully think through the process of, is it worth losing everything if I challenge this? And of course, attorneys in litigation, which I don't do, so I'm not a litigator. I do estate planning. I try to make everyone happy. Litigation makes nobody happy, except for the attorney. They get paid a lot, so then they get happy. But that's the only person who gets happy in litigation are the attorneys. And so what it's trying to do is, when the attorney sees a no contest clause, the thought process is, let me lead my client through the risk assessment of whether or not it's worth taking this forward and challenging what's going on and possibly losing everything. Now, if you're already receiving nothing, so if you have been a disinherited child, then, well, what do you have to lose? You have to lose more money. You could be told that, nope, it's upheld, and now you get to pay everyone else's attorney fees for dragging them into a valid will where there was no issue and where there was no weakness found in it legally. And so, therefore, you have more to lose, which is more money, more opportunity, and then also just a deeper divide in the family. So the no contest clause is a way to help people stop and count the cost. Is this really going to be worth it? Now, so that's the most common thing that people find is a no contest clause. Yes, they are upheld in Washington State. And the objective is to make people think twice before they move forward. Now, another way that we can try to help resolve conflict is by putting in a mediation or arbitration clause into one of these instruments. And that what that's doing is saying is that you don't have a legal right to sue. You must go to an arbitrator or a mediator and work out your differences first. Now, if we look at a biblical model, this almost makes more sense to a lot of Christians, which is the word says, hey, if you've offended somebody, drop it and go to them and figure out what's going on in the relationship, right? Mm-hmm. And if someone is not being corrected, to bring in somebody else, bring in a witness, and then go to the church. So there is certainly a flavor of mediation that we find in the Word of God. And so So this could be another tool that keeps people out of a court process and puts them in between a mediator or arbitrator to figure out their differences, an opportunity to talk things out. Now, the negative of mediation and arbitration nowadays is that it's becoming just as expensive to utilize that system as it is just to sue somebody. And that may not be completely true. Typically, it is more expensive to still just put forward a lawsuit and try to sue somebody for what is going on or what they think has been abridged in the estate plan. Mm. So mediation can still be another tool instead of people just running off to court and trying to use the court system to air out their grievances. So those are kind of the two legal mechanisms that we can put into estate planning. One is called a no contest clause. And I always suggest that there's a no contest clause in good estate planning.
That's pretty
planning.
Standard.
I think it is. And now I have a different variation of a no contest clause as well, which is I explain it as a big stick or a small stick. The big stick is you're out. So we're gonna swing the big stick. Can you tell how I was raised and when I was raised the stick of the word was still used. So we use the big stick, which is you're completely out, or we can use a smaller stick, which is you're going to have to pay everybody's legal fees and attorney fees if you have not found a justifiable reason to actually bring this case before a court. And very briefly, that actually addresses the question that you had, which is, what if somebody has a legitimate beef? So what if we have a trust and the trustee has done nothing? They're just sitting on their hands and they're not closing the estate. They're not in motion. They're not giving notices. They're not keeping people informed. Would someone have a legitimate beef with that person for not doing their job well? The answer is yes. And a no contest clause would not be upheld in that circumstance. It's not talking about individuals with legitimate concerns because their rights are being abridged. That's not what a no contest clause does. A no contest clause says if you are going to be greedy and try to set all of this aside and make it null and void, then there's the risk. But if you are a beneficiary and you have a legitimate concern and a legitimate complaint, the no contest clause does not bind that all of a sudden, just because you asked a question, you're out.
Yeah. What about in the last couple of months of the person's life, they all of a sudden put their caregiver on the in the will? And that brings up all kinds of questions, and people have a legitimate concern about the legitimacy of the will.
Those are the difficult ones, and to where you're going to have to show fraud, or you're going to have to show that they were unduly influenced. Mm-hmm. And so those are difficult cases. And again, if you're not trying to set aside the whole agreement and destroy the whole agreement, you're challenging the validity of it or a section of it. Typically, a no contest clause is not going to be upheld.
Okay.
But it's there to allow discretion to the judge to determine whether you just simply want more money and actually even the caregiver or anyone else had was owed money, and this is how they were actually being paid. There's a lot of scenarios in that question because it's a more common scenario than what maybe listeners would imagine, or a marriage at the end and then they die, and things of this nature get into the way of good estate planning. So I go back to, how is your relationship with your estate planner? And having a document doesn't always tell the story. So having relationship, a continuation process, an updating process, that actually protects the estate and the family and is actually a far better system to utilize than just a go in and get my document one and done attorney. So yes, those things happen, but you got to take each scenario individually and really try to tear it apart.
Well, you're really into also really bringing the family into the estate plan by educating them maybe what to anticipate.
Yeah, that's right. And so a lot of things can be calmed down in a family if they know what in the heck is going on. Mm. There is sometimes a philosophy of this is my private stuff and they're going to learn about the estate plan after I die.
Right.
And why,
maybe not a good idea.
Well, you know, it's not my position to say yay or nay. We're all wired differently. And so I do encourage that we talk to our family. We let them know what's happening in our estate plan because broken or unrealized expectations is a large place of conflict. And so if they expect what the document says, even if it's something that they have to wrestle with. Well, now they know, and it's not hitting them during the grieving process on top of now finding out information that they don't like. Well, can we have a conversation? Can we pull the family in and get everybody on the same page and talk about why this is the plan that you want to have played out and see if we can get the family moving in the same direction and give them some good education, not just about the estate plan itself, but also about the process that they're going to experience. Education is a key in making a smooth transition. And that's what we're trying to talk about. How do we remove conflict and make a smooth transition with everybody so that we can have family peace? I said in the first part of the show, which was last week's part one, that boy, if I knew that the money I had left over was going to cause family conflict, I'd probably do something different. Mm. It's my passion to see that families are held together or even through this process are brought together. And that can take place with good communication, clear expectations, and some very good legal work to make sure that your will or your trust are properly created and are going to really align with everything that your Heavenly Father has told you to do for your family.
People are intrigued. They want to help. They want to have you help them with avoiding family conflict in their estate plan. How do they get in touch with you, Paul?
Head over to our website, legacyandfaith.com. There's past podcasts, upcoming educational opportunities, ways to communicate with us. Head over to legacyandfaith.com.
Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant.
Thank you for joining us for the Legacy and Faith Show. You can find more information about the show and Paul Grant at legacyandfaith.com. Join us next week at the same time as we learn to build God's kingdom and continue our journey on how to protect wealth and family values for generations. All discussions on the Legacy and Faith Show are intended to be about general legal issues. If a situation applies to you, then we encourage you to seek specific legal advice. Please do not rely upon any discussions from this program in place of having a personal relationship with your attorney. Any listener question that may have been answered also does not constitute legal advice and does not establish a client-attorney relationship.